Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Thanks for downloading this episode of the Corner Office Podcast. The conversation we have for you today starts with me walking into not a corner office, really, but a pretty big one nonetheless, in the Tribeca neighborhood of New York City.
Hi. I'm Kai. Nice to see you. How are you?
Take
a minute to finish your email if you want to. We kind of interrupted.
It's Jane Rosenthal's office.
This is a great office. I love the idea of no desk and just a big dining room table, basically.
Because I work better at either the kitchen table or I work better in bed.
You and Winston Churchill.
Me and Winston Churchill.
And the work she's doing, wherever she's doing it, is of two different kinds. One, she's a film producer. Her credits include more than 50 films, Meet the Parents, About a Boy, and Bohemian Rhapsody, to name a couple. And number two, she's also the CEO and chairwoman of the company that puts out the Tribeca Film Festival, which she and her longtime producing partner Robert De Niro founded almost 20 years ago. I did let her finish writing that email, by the way.
Those are great knickknacks. Is that Narendra Modi up there in the picture?
Yes.
Eventually.
Wow. And then the Wonder Woman comic book, which I love.
Yes, her real name is Jane. So we
is
have,
it?
Yeah, that's about all we have in common.
Finally, we settled in and got to the business at hand.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Jane Rosenthal, thanks so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
So this is going to air opening day of the festival. So my question to you is, a week out now, do you have time to be sitting here talking to me?
No, not really. But you came to town, so always happy to welcome people to New York and Tribeca and talk about the festival. So thank you for having me.
What do you look for when you're thinking about films for this festival?
New voices, new ways of telling story, as well as looking back at some great films and great filmmakers that will be able to screen their films in ways audiences haven't seen them for a while. I think I've led us into the immersive mixed reality space and keep pushing into the gaming space more.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I want to get there in a second. But it might do people well to back up and talk about why this festival and how this festival came to be, because I don't know that everybody necessarily knows.
No, it's interesting how people have short-term memories.
Because now you're something, right? This is something in the film festival circuit, but it had a very distinct origin.
So Bob and I had talked about doing a festival for a lot of years, but you don't stop your day job and put on a film festival. And 9/11 happened, and we're just a few blocks north of where the towers stood. And after 9/11, we did a series of these dinner downtowns to bring people back downtown, because you had to show your ID to get below Canal Street. Mm-hmm. Nobody was coming downtown. It was very much in the city, sort of an uptown-downtown divide. And people were scared. They didn't know what they were breathing, who they were breathing. They were afraid of a lot of things. And we started these dinner downtowns, and people came, and we went into all these different neighborhoods. And by the third one, there were thousands of people that were marching into neighborhoods, and it was more like have a meal, save a job, at which point we said, okay, maybe we should do a film festival to give our neighborhood, our community, something to look forward to. So we announced that we were going to do a film festival, and at the time, Governor Pataki and Meryl Streep and Ed Burns and Martin Scorsese, all who are neighborhood folks, came and announced this with us. And 128 days later, we opened the festival, and So shocking that I'm still standing here 18 years later.
So 18 years later.
Or 18 festivals years later. It's actually 17 years.
Fair enough. Has it done for this area of town what you wanted it to do?
Yes. You look at those early years, you looked at how our neighborhood came out, the response we were getting from just the locals, that it gave everybody something to look forward to. Like they could switch their thinking. You now look at downtown. I mean, when we first started, we went into the theaters. The first time we went into the theaters down here, we were in hazmat suits. So, and then the festival over the years kept changing as you were building. So people would criticize us and say, oh, it's the Tribeca Film Festival, but what are they doing midtown? Well, we're midtown because you can't queue up in front of the Goldman Sachs building that was in the middle of construction. Mm. So it has, there are, I don't know, 11, 12 new schools in the neighborhood. The Financial District is rebuilt. The museum and the memorial are open. People come from all over the world to see that. Tribeca's a great place to live and work.
Without making this all about you, right, and keeping the focus mostly on the festival, I do want to ask what it is about movies and films that do it for you. I mean, you've been doing this a long time, right? CBS and Disney, Warner Brothers, this partnership with De Niro for 30 years now, right?
Oh, God.
I know, sorry.
No, it's okay. I was only 12 when I started.
What is it, though, about this kind of product, if I could be really materialistic about it, that does it for you?
Well, I never picked a major. So I never picked a major when I was in school, and I'm so curious or interested about so many different things. The one thing about movies, or now, you know, whether you're movies or television, but now we make content.
Yeah. Right. How do you feel about that word, by the way? Content.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I
you know, I've always, I don't like that word. It is what it is, but I like to make stories, whether it's, no matter short form, long form, CD-ROM. I mean, I was one of the first to make a CD-ROM. That business didn't last too long, but it's, you get to explore different people, different worlds, different parts of our culture, our society, different parts of history, human nature. So you're always putting yourself in a different world, and it can help satiate your curiosity. Because for the past year, working with Ava DuVernay and working on When They See Us, the story of the Central Park Five, you know, what can you do as filmmakers when you're telling a story to help promote political change, some change in our system, and bring attention to injustices that people may not be paying attention to.
So is that sort of, in a really macro sense, why film festivals matter today? Because I can sit on my living room couch and get content at the push of a button. And now you're being intentional about gathering, you're making an investment to gather people and show it in a communal space. Why do that?
So let me go back, because Central Park Five is not in the festival.
No,
it's been aired. What you have right now is you have so much content that's in the marketplace. And so who tells you what to see, and who helps you explore beyond an algorithm? And one of the things that a festival, especially a festival like Tribeca, that has the artist imprimatur. It means, you know, there are so many artists behind it in its founding, and filmmakers who work, you know, Bob and I work in the industry. Paula Weinstein works in the industry.
So does Redford with Sundance.
Redford with Sundance. And Redford was first, without question, and has been doing it a very long time. But we're different in that we were started very much as a people's festival and for an audience, for a general audience, not just the industry, although we very much court the industry. But to go back to your question specifically, a festival, whether it's Sundance or Tribeca, allows you to come, and you know that it has been screened by so many programmers, and you have a chance to watch things if you like this film, you may like that film, and you may have the time to just discover something new. And it is true that seeing something with an audience and then having a conversation with the filmmaker afterwards, or having a conversation with the subject of the documentary afterwards, gives you a new perspective, gives you a different perspective. And, you know, everyone in a society right now that is so much about, you know, iPhones and not eye contact, seeing things together, it's just a different experience. It doesn't mean that you shouldn't go and look at it at home alone, but it gives you a different experience when you are together with an audience.
You've talked a lot about wanting to use this festival as a way to elevate female filmmakers and use it as a device to empower them to speak out, be heard, and do their good works. How do you think you're doing on that?
You know, I think we're doing great. We've always been doing this. Our company is 78% women. I wish we'd get to a point where we weren't having to say, oh, it's women filmmakers, it's this filmmaker. I wish we could just say filmmakers. I wish that we would no longer have to point it out as the exception and not just the norm. And that's frustrating. We have for 15 years done through our Tribeca Film Institute, have done the Tribeca All Access program, which was a program for women and diverse filmmakers to be able to tell their stories and to be mentored. A number of films have come out of that. We do a project with Chanel called Through Her Lens, which is, again, mentoring filmmakers, giving grants, also doing a project with P&G. And then as the festival itself, we look to bring the best films. We do have, you know, I think we're at 48% women films in the festival. That said, it was at one point there was a question about should we pick this film because it's a woman or this film because it's better? And I'm just like, can you just pick the film that's better? I mean, I wish we would, and it's not going to happen for a while. The window is open for us as women, and we have a lot of work to do in terms of pay equality. So when does this all change?
So are you a CEO who's a film producer, or are you a film producer who's a CEO?
I'm a film producer that's a CEO. I think there were so many things that have happened to me along the way that were, you know, it's an unexpected part of my own journey. So I had been, spring of 2001, I had two little girls, and I was doing a movie in London about a boy, and I was doing a movie in L.A., and I was going London, New York, L.A., L.A., New York, London. I was picking up a kid. I was running back and forth. I was running into the office on 9/11 for a staff meeting. And then the world changed. And I only believed that we were going to do that film festival once. I didn't realize that we had signed multi-year deals with major sponsors. Here we are 18 years later. So I had to grow and learn, and a lot of it was on the job training, and, you know, buck stops here. So
I want to talk for just a quick second here before I let you go about a film you're working on for Netflix with Scorsese and you and Bob De Niro called The Irishman about Jimmy Hoffa. First of all, you've been working on this thing you've been trying to get it to the screen for 10 years?
Probably a little more. The first time I read, I Hear You Paint Houses was 2007. It was research for a project that we were going to make with Marty and Bob called The Winter of Frankie
Scorsese,
Machine.
Mr. Scorsese, Mr. De Niro to me.
Right. Anyway. Okay, we were going to make this movie, and then it kind of stopped. It just it stalled. It was hard getting financing for it at the time. And then I believe it was 2014. I said, let's do this. Let's do a reading.
Wow.
And I honestly thought if we did this reading, it was going to be the only thing I, you know, that Bob and I, that we'd have of, I hear you paint houses.
Right.
I was at that time just like, okay, we'll do this. Whatever happens, happens, but we'll have this as the memory of I hear you paint houses. And we did the reading, and it was great.
And now Netflix and a bunch of people are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to bring this thing to the screen, which is kind of bananas.
It's not bananas. It's the way the business is going. I don't think it's bananas at all when you look at what the price of movies are. And, you know, it's an amazing movie with iconic stars together that you've never seen. Pesci and Pacino and Keitel and De Niro all together in a movie.
So with the caveat that Netflix is your production partner in this film, what do you make of how they are disrupting the delivery of the material that you make? I mean, Roma and going to the big screen and the Oscars and the window of availability.
First of all, look at the fact that with Roma, a black and white film in Spanish,
mm-hmm,
that is in on the tip of people's tongues. People are talking about Roma. That wouldn't happen if you had just put it in a limited platform release. And Alfonso's an amazing filmmaker, and truly the way Netflix marketed that film and released it has put it out there for millions of people to see, both in theaters and, you know, globally as a global launch. So I think that the industry is, you know, every so many years the industry is disrupted. It was disrupted when you went from silent movies to talkies. It was disrupted when you went from black and white, mm-hmm, to color. I mean, it happens. It's just happening now at a faster pace. The other thing you have right now is the audience has never had more choice, and
right,
that is what is truly changing. You also have, when we talk about theaters, at Tribeca alone, we've lost probably close to 8,000 seats with the way the theaters have changed. So theaters are becoming smaller and bigger seats, and yep, it's about what you're also going to order while you can lean back and watch a movie. If I want to lean back, order, and watch a movie, I prefer to be on a plane going someplace. But I do love watching movies in a theater, and I don't think that will change. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I think it's a very exciting time for creators.
Let me just circle back really quickly to this idea of some of the new technologies and how you're bringing them to the festival. Gaming, virtual reality. Why do you feel the need to do that?
Well, very specifically with game creators, you are looking, that's almost the equivalent. If you play something like Red Dead Redemption 2, which is a very much a story-based, mm-hmm, character-based game, those actors work together for 5 years. It has more in common with binge-watching a TV series.
Mm.
There are so many filmmakers right now that have been influenced by gaming. There are gamers that have been influenced by film. So how you're telling those stories, as that audience is changing, as gamers are getting older and they want shorter gameplay, you're seeing a different kind of game creation happening. And that, to me, is very exciting. Then in terms of the immersive space, it's looking at ways that you can tell stories that are nonlinear, that you can walk in somebody's shoes, that particularly in the virtual reality and also in some of the augmented reality work, you're present, and it is about right. presence. You still don't have the right distribution yet for all that. So a place that, you know, you can see some of this work and can only see some of this right. work is going to be at a, you know, in a festival environment. So we're very proud of it.
Jane, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. I talked too much. I'm
no,
sorry.
It was
God,
great.
I should have That's not have mixed, had that much coffee.
That's it. My conversation with Jane Rosenthal, the CEO, the chairwoman, and co-founder of Tribeca Enterprises. Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you do get your podcasts. Leave us a review while you're there, if you would. This episode of the Corner Office Podcast was produced by Bridget Bodner and Maria Hollenhorst. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive director of On Demand. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Another episode for you in a couple of weeks.